Welcome to Orphans No More, a media extension of Justice for Orphans, a ministry dedicated to rally the church for the cause of the fatherless, inspiring, educating, and equipping believers to care for vulnerable children, and supporting those who have heard and heeded the call of James 1:27. Here's your host, Sandra Flack.
A generous person will prosper. Whoever refreshes others will be refreshed. That is from Proverbs 11, verse 25. Hi there, I am Sandra Flack. Welcome to episode 219 of the Orphans No More podcast. We are recording this show during the coronavirus shutdown. It's the beginning of May. My kids and I have begun our eighth week of shelter in place, which includes the fun adventures of homeschooling, like so many of you are. We're here in upstate New York. We're not seriously impacted with a lot of illness like they are downstate, but we've been social distancing and staying home, sheltering in place and all of that for about 8 weeks now. So we're pretty much done with that in our minds. We are totally ready to be done. And I'm recording from home. So I have two teenage boys. My husband will be coming home from work soon, probably. The dog may bark. So you may witness some chaos or hear some chaos in the back room. We're just keeping it real because we're all in the same place, right? But I thank you for joining us today. And I hope that you are navigating the challenges and the concerns that have been created by the COVID-19 shutdown. Maybe listening to this podcast will bring you some refreshment and encouragement today. We're going to talk about self-care with our guest, who I'm very excited to introduce you to. If you listened to episode 218, last week's show, we talked with the amazing Jody Jackson Tucker. She is an adoptive mom, the international director for Orphan Sunday, and author of the brand new Bible study that she wrote for foster and adoptive moms. And the name of the Bible study is Second Mother. Today, we have with us the illustrator of Second Mother, author, artist, teacher, and adoptive mom, Tracy Laux. So welcome to the show, Tracy.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
I'm thrilled to have you. I've already mentioned to our listeners that this interview sort of picks up where last week's interview with Jody Jackson Tucker left off, but we're going to get into some, you know, some deeper stuff beyond just talking about Bible study. But I really want to kind of start with your family's adoption story. You and your husband, John, have seven children, three biological and four through adoption. And I really want to hear about your family's adoption story to let our listeners know. Elia, is that how you pronounce your daughter's name?
It's Aaliyah.
Aaliyah. Aaliyah was adopted in the United States at birth. And then Aiden and Emma adopted from Ukraine in 2009. I have four Ukrainians that call me mom. And Matthias, who you call Maddie, adopted domestically in 2010. And I know you'll be sharing the story. Maddie died before his fourth birthday. He's a big part of your story, a big part of your ministry, and we want to hear all about that. So first, let's just begin with what led you and John to pursue adopting.
Sure, sure. Well, I grew up in a family with, well, I have two siblings, but my parents fostered for a number of years when I was in elementary school. So I was exposed to that idea and was, you know, that was modeled as part, it was part of my childhood. You know, the good, the bad, and the, you know, the hard, you know, all of it.
Yeah.
So, you know, there was always that thing. I don't think I can remember a specific point where it was like, I'm going to do this too. But as I got older and as, you know, I met John and we got married, this just was kind of a constant dialogue in as we thought about our family. And we went on to have three children who, you know, were in elementary school aged, entering into middle school. And at that point in our lives, John's brother, Derek, and his wife started to pursue adoption. And they adopted daughters from the Marshall Islands. And we just, you know, our family then became an adoptive family. You know, we had nieces that were adopted, and we got to experience that within our family. And I think it was during that time that we were like, you know, we want to pursue this. But like many families, there was just like, how do you do this? How are we going to, you know, I don't know, the first thing, I don't even know where to start. And so there was a couple of years where we talked about it, but there wasn't really any action other than, you know, being aunt and uncle to a growing family that was experiencing adoption as part of their family. But we moved, moved to Kansas City in 2000. And do you do this with dates? Yeah. Let's see. Yeah. We moved to Kansas City in 2006, and that's where John's brother and his wife were raising their family. And so then we were, you know, not just the long distance aunt and uncle, we were immersed in that and part of their family in day-to-day life. And so we, you know, were observing, asking questions. We met some other families who had adopted that became close friends. And so it wasn't too long after we moved here that good friends of ours had adopted a child domestically, and we sat down to have coffee with them and say, tell us how this works. Mm-hmm. And so that's where it started. And, you know, it was at that coffee meeting that they actually handed us a check for our home study. And as just a way of saying that they, you know, wanted to participate in this with us. So, and that's where it all started with Aaliyah. And so Aaliyah, we got approved our home study in December of 2006. And it was recommended that we work with an adoption consultant to have somebody to guide us and coach us through the process. So we set out to do that. And really before our home study was actually even finished, we were already getting contacted about possible adoption situations domestically. And so we barely got that home study signed, and we were matched with a birth mother in the first part of 2007. And then Aaliyah was born in March. So it was very fast for us, faster than we ever anticipated. And that was how it began. And I like to call that our Disneyland adoption, because it was, you know, pretty, you know, stress-free in the scheme of what adoption can look like, even domestically. You know, we didn't face a whole lot of, you know, really challenging things. As a matter of fact, you know, we had thought we were going into this with the idea of, you know, kind of a semi-open adoption, and we now have a fully open adoption with Aaliyah's birth family. And so that's been a really beautiful experience. And so that's where we started. And that's when I began, shortly after that, working with that same company that we hired as an adoption consultant, and did that for 10 years.
Oh, incredible. I love that. I was excited to get to the part where you adopted from Ukraine, because that was part of my family's experience. So how did you kind of shift from domestic infant adoption to then, after bringing home Aaliyah, adopting from Ukraine?
Right. So super, you know how you enter the adoption community, and with blogging, back then it was blogging that really connected adoptive families, and starting to be Facebook. But I started connecting, we started connecting with other adoptive families. John's brother, again, they were pursuing an additional adoption. I can't even remember how many they were at by that point. They decided to go to Ukraine, and my sister-in-law had sent me a link saying, hey, here's the boys that we're going to go try to adopt. They're in Ukraine. They're in the same orphanage. There's these three boys that are in the same orphanage. I wish I could get this other fourth little boy, but Derek said, no, just three. People laugh at the whole just three, but
just three, yeah.
Yes. So anyway, she goes, scroll down to the bottom of the page and look at this blonde little boy with Down syndrome. He's in the same orphanage, and I just wish I could bring him home too. And I scroll down, and there goes my heart, you know? So that's how that started. So that was our son, Aiden. And we saw his little, you know, thumbnail picture, mm-hmm. on the website, and we started the process of updating our home study, and someone had said, make sure you get approved for two just in case. So our second adoption with Emma didn't start the process till we were already in Ukraine, and that was a blind referral where, you know, we were just like, is there a little girl that also needs a home? And they kind of showed us some files, and we, you know, just said, all right, this one. And so our Ukrainian adoption was not so Disneyland. It was a lot of red tape, and, you know, what was supposed to be this much time was three times as much time. We ended up living in Ukraine for 2 months, which I'm sure you know is kind of a long time. That adoption, you know, was full of challenges beyond, you know, just red tape and, you know, that sort of thing, you know, dealing with children that were 2.5 and 3, and already right from the time we were in Ukraine beginning to deal with, okay, this is hard. This is going to be hard. This one of the two especially had, you know, right off the bat challenges with connecting and fear, so much fear. And then you've got language barriers and all of those things. So it was a labor for sure.
Yes. Now, you said Aiden had Down syndrome. Does Emma also?
No, Emma has fetal alcohol syndrome.
Yeah, our two of ours have FAS, so I'm very familiar with that and that whole process.
And so she was the one that had the harder time initially and greatly due to that, you know.
Yeah, it definitely is heartbreaking, the impact.
It is.
You know, that has, because it shouldn't.
No.
It shouldn't be.
We could probably talk a whole show just about that.
Yes, but I really want to get to Maddie. So okay. I've been on your website. I've read, you know, some of your blog posts. I've seen the pictures. He's absolutely precious. Tell us about Maddie.
So when the three little ones were 2, 2.5, and 3 when they came home from Ukraine. So we had three toddlers. And then it was about 9 months later that we really felt like we wanted to adopt another child with Down syndrome specifically. But we also knew that we didn't want to do an international adoption with the kids being so little. And working as an adoption consultant at the time, I knew there was just such a need, even in the U.S., for families to adopt children with special needs. So I just, in my work, just kind of kept my ears open. And there were a couple cases that came across, and we just kind of didn't, it wasn't the right fit. It wasn't even that it wasn't the right fit. It was just a no, you know. It was like, I knew it wasn't, you know, the right time. So, but then there was, then Maddie's case came across my email, and we immediately, I mean, it was fast. We had to hustle to get our stuff finished and to get a profile made for the birth mom to look at. And we submitted thinking, who's going to choose us? We have this huge family. And, but that's exactly why she chose us. She said she grew up as an only child, and she wanted Maddie to have a family. And so we were matched in, I don't know, in the winter. And then we were matched in July, and he was born in October. And he was born in St. Louis, which is just a 3-4 hour drive from Kansas City. So when she went into labor, we went there, and we were ready to go, thinking that we would just be with, you know, released in a week. Cause sometimes children with Down syndrome need a little extra time with feeding issues. We thought that would be our biggest hurdle. And, we were there on the day of his birth, and the doctor walked in and said, so I guess you've been told that your son has heart disease. Some great bedside manner, because no, we didn't know that. And so we were then thrust into the whole, not just dealing with special needs, but medical needs as well. He had a severe AV canal defect. At 9 days old, he developed sepsis in the hospital and ended up having to be put on a ventilator. And Matt, to make an incredibly long story short, Maddie was in the hospital for the first 11 months of his life. We were able to have him transferred to Kansas City by plane, when he was about 2 months old, and he ended up needing a tracheostomy, a feeding tube, two open heart surgeries, a lot of other things that went on in that first 11 months. And then he came home on a ventilator, and we turned what I thought would be a little boy's nursery into a, basically into a medical room. So we had home nurses that were incredible and supported us, and he grew and he healed and developed, but he would have setbacks and sicknesses because, you know, well, John and I talk about it often right now. If Maddie was here now, this would be incredibly hard for our family. And we would be, you know, so, but all of the things, the flus, the pneumonias, the viruses that would go around would often send him back into the hospital. And so he had a really rough year in the winter of 2013. But then he came out of what was a horrible winter and just started really thriving, and he wasn't on a vent anymore. He still had his trach with a little oxygen, and we were able to, you know, do things that we'd been dreaming of doing, go to the zoo, go to family picnics. We were able to take him on vacation to Michigan, to our family cottage in July of 2014. And he was walking with a walker, and therapies were going great. And we thought, like, oh, we've finally gotten over the worst of it. And then in August of that year, a month after we got back from vacation, like this dream vacation, he had an asthma attack that I suspect was related to something viral that, you know, we'll never know, because I just couldn't put myself through an autopsy. I was like, I chose not to do that. But and he died. And so it was, there were a dozen other times when we were bracing ourselves for that, and this wasn't one of them.
Yeah.
So, you know, people think maybe because he had special needs, we were expecting this, and we weren't, you know, we just weren't. Nobody thinks the worst all the time. So,
Oh my goodness.
But Maddie was, you know, he was a vibrant, joy filled. I say often when I'm right, like, I think that children who are so limited physically and who struggle are just, it somehow, their spirit, their soul is just magnified.
Yeah.
And with the things that are deficits are nothing compared to the magnitude of the joy. And he would have nurses that would come to his room that weren't even on his shift just because they wanted their Maddie fix, you know, the kids. Aww. He was like the hub of our family, you know, everything. He was at the center. Yeah.
Yeah. So Tracy, you write and speak and blog about your grief from the loss of Maddie. What can you share with our listeners? When did you know that you needed to begin taking care of yourself? You needed some self-care as you processed through that grief.
Yeah. Well, honestly, Maddie taught me that. It was that same year that he came out of the hospital with all those really hard illnesses. We got him home, and I think it was a matter of a couple days after he got home, I crashed, and I ended up in bed for 5 days, just so sick. With migraines and just body and just everything. My body was just like so much stress. And so that took me, it was like a wake up call for me. You know, I have been at hospital bedsides and dealing with three little ones, two of them with so much trauma. I'm going to ask you if you can hear me still, because you froze.
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay.
You froze on my end too. So our listeners, we're recording this via Zoom because we're all sheltering in place, and it's during the shutdown, the COVID-19 shutdown. I think we're both okay right now and not frozen, but then my husband came home from work and he and the boys just started up some kind of tractor outside. So if you hear a tractor noise off in the distance,
okay,
it is because there's some kind of piece of machinery on out there. So again, just being real, we're all, you know, stuck at home and happen to
be real right now.
But the technology at least allows us to be able to continue to have these conversations, because
yes,
they're still vital. So pick up with what you were sharing.
Sure.
Yeah.
Maddie came out of his major hard winter, and I, my body just was like, I've been through too much. Take care of me now. And so I did, and I started to change a lot of things in our family, nutrition and, you know, what kind of foods I was putting into my body, started getting exercise, started taking time, letting other people help me. That was a huge one for me because I'm the type of person that just gives and gives and gives and does and does and does and doesn't ask for help because, you know, I just plow through. And so I started learning those things, and I took off some weight and I, you know, got rid of some inflammation in my body through nutrition and all of that, started working out and all of those things, so that at the point when Maddie died, I had those things in place, thankfully. So when I, a year after that, when he died, I kind of knew what I needed to do. And I knew I needed to keep drinking a lot of water, and I needed to listen to my body. And to be honest, I didn't listen super well, and I overdid it, and I ended up tearing some muscles in my shoulder in the gym and had to have some shoulder surgery, had some other things. I think grief does a number on our bodies, and I ended up needing to have a hysterectomy at the same time, totally, that I believe is just trauma effect on my body during that time. And so again, I was like, okay, I got to take care of me, and taking care of a family that's grieving at the same time. It was so much. So making sure that I made space to, you know, exercise, even if it was just yoga or stretching, and making time for writing obviously was huge for me. And because of that, then I began to just, I'd always written on my blog, and writing is a huge place of self-care for me, because it's a way of just, you know, expressing my emotions instead of bottling them up. You know, therapy during that time was super important. All of those things that I knew that I was going to need, and that my family would need as well. So I began writing then my grief journey on the blog. It had always been about adoption or about Maddie or about whatever. And it just, you know, I write what I'm living. And so began writing about my grief, and people connected with that and were listening. And so as I was learning how to process my own grief and care for myself at the same time, as I got to a place where I was, you know, you don't get over grief, but you get to the point where you are learning to, you know, to rise, learning to walk through it. You know how that when you get knocked down, you know how to get back up. I felt like I wanted to be able to support other people that were going through that. And that's when, you know, I began offering coaching and support groups for other people that were walking through not only grief, but traumatic things. And I had been doing this before with adoptive moms, helping show moms how, you know, talking about my own, you know, burnout and how to begin to develop, cultivate self-care and soul care, all of that. And so this was, again, a natural expression of what I already had known and experienced, and how can I then use my own journey to, you know, I talk often, and I've written about, you know, when I speak, you know, there's always, I firmly believe that there's always somebody behind us that needs our hand for support. And there's always somebody ahead of us that we can reach out to for support. And I think that's how we're designed as community to work. You know, we have our own experience, but there's always people that are a few steps ahead of us on the journey. And those are those way showers. You know, I call them the way showers, or the healers, the people that are like reflecting hope, you know, mm-hmm. and that have experienced healing and that have experienced growth. And those are the people I looked to when I was at my worst, you know. And then when you get to the place where you feel like you're not as shaky on your feet, there's always somebody, you know, a little further behind that needs to hear the hope that you have to offer. So
I love that. I love that perspective. Before we get too much farther, I don't want to skip over talking about a book for children that you wrote. Maddie inspired the book. It's entitled Maddie Breathes. Tell us about that book.
Yeah, I grabbed a copy of it so you can see it. It's a sweet little book. And actually, Maddie and I wrote this together while he was living. And we realized when we were in the hospital with the kids and the doctors were, you know, child life and nurses were helping us to prepare our kids at home for what Maddie, when they would come in, especially after he got his trach, what to expect. And they sent us home with some materials, but it was like, there needs to be something better. This is too technical or too medical or too corny. There was a thing with Elmo with that trach, and it was like, okay, we got to do better. And so I started kind of, as I was learning how to care for my kid and as I was becoming a medical mom, so to speak, I thought, you know, what could Maddie and I do to make it so that others had an easier time of it, so to speak. And so the kids, let me see if I can show you a picture. Well, Aiden was the doctor in the book. And so that was super sweet. So all the kids were little and when we did this book, and they're all, you know, it's basically, we wanted a book that would show that life with a trach can be joy-filled and happy. And we wanted a book that would explain that in simple medical terminology in a way that wasn't frightening or scary for kids. And so I'm horrible at keeping, I self-published it because I didn't know what else to do. And so that's what I did. It's on Amazon. But it has been, hospitals have bought it for, I mean, our local children's hospital gives it out to families. I don't know if they still have any left, but I need to check with them. A hospital in Cincinnati uses it to give to their families when they're facing this big, big challenge. I have friends that'll take it in and read it to their classroom to prepare them for a new student who's coming into the school so that it's not so scary. So we're pretty proud of this. This was read by a senator at the Library of Congress this year in a children's gathering celebrating kids with diversity. So I was super proud of Maddie for making his way to Washington, D.C. this year.
That is amazing. I love that. And I know you mentioned that the book can be found on Amazon. So we do want to let our listeners know. It's also available on your website, which is thehealingbreath.org on Amazon. And also because we wanted to reference Jody Jackson Tucker's Bible study for foster and adoptive moms, entitled Second Mother. We talked about that last week. It was written by Jody, and you, Tracy, illustrated the cover design and beautiful illustrations that can be colored as sort of part of some self-care for moms navigating through that Bible study. So that is beautiful. I love that. So you can find that on Amazon as well. And Tracy, you're an artist, so we've been talking about that. Art is a big part of your self-care. How else, what are you doing from as far as the artistic standpoint? I know you mentioned exercise and nutrition.
Yeah, and the art came, you know, my degree is in art education, but when raising a family, all my creativity went into my home, into making parties special for my kids, but it was all about that. And so for a lot of years, my actual personal art, painting and drawing, kind of went to the wayside. And so after Maddie died, a few years in, I was going through some other, you know, I call it secondary trauma related to, you know, the big one, you know, and I just felt like I just gonna go buy paint. I mean, I need art supplies in the house. And so I started painting again, and it was, I'm not somebody that's good, like just sitting in contemplative prayer, like silently sitting. And I tend to be somebody that needs music on or needs to be writing or drawing. And so this became a place of a prayer for me to be able to paint and just to let, it's kind of a release for me. It's like a letting go. And so I started doing that, and somebody saw something I did on Facebook and said, you know, would you consider making this or doing this? And so now I am, you know, doing commissions for people that want to either celebrate the life of somebody in their life who has died or celebrate something in their own life that feels like a monumental thing, whether it's healing from a traumatic life event or a celebrating an engagement or a wedding or a new baby. I create paintings that reflect that and with symbols and imagery that are important to that individual. So I do that a lot. I sell prints of my work. And again, my work is there on Instagram. It's the Healing Breath Studio. And that's a great place to follow my artwork.
Oh, I love that. So, and I've been on your website, so I've seen beautiful, beautiful paintings that you've created. So during this time of COVID-19 shutdown and the stresses and challenges that we're all facing, having to homeschool our children, and I homeschooled my kids for 16 years and then finally put the youngest two in school 3 years ago because they needed that.
Right.
And now they're back and we're all kind of traumatized over that. But women, moms, especially, and we know adoptive moms parenting children with special needs, you know, we tend to, like you said, we don't take care of ourselves very well all the time. You put your creativity on the back burner. We don't necessarily eat well or exercise like we should. We make that our family the priority.
We're very good at that.
Yeah. And all moms really, you know, moms tend to do that, but especially when we have children, adopted children, children with special needs, it just requires so much more of us, but then we can end up burned out and, you know, we're not really able to take care of them well if we're not feeling well, if we're not doing well. So share with us why it's important to do some self-care and give us some ideas on, how, especially as we're stuck home during this time and there's a lot of stress and our kids are, you know, having a difficult time navigating that stress as well. How can we self-care?
Yeah, sure. I'd love to talk about that. Before I do, though, I want to just acknowledge that as I'm giving all these ideas, I know it's not as easy as it sounds for everybody. I know that there are people that are single parenting out there, and I know that there are people who don't have a second adult in the home to help them. So I want to acknowledge that before I start saying, here are some ideas, and I just want to acknowledge how hard it is for single parents out there right now. And I just want to take a moment to say, I'm sorry. I'm sorry that you're having to walk through this alone right now. And it stinks. So
It's hard.
So when this all started, at first you're like, oh, this will be fun and then it's like, no, this is not fun. So I have found that, first of all, I'm trying to be really diligent to like set time or like what is expected of our kids. And that's it. And like, let's try to be done by lunchtime with the school district's expectations so that then we can have lunch and explore and create and have things that are, because they need it they need that self-care as much as I do. They need that time away from their screens, time away from things that feel hard. And so, but for me, obviously my art, my creative space is a little getaway for me. If I can get them started on something and I feel confident that they're going to be able to handle it, even if it's like listening to some audio visual books online for a little while and I can get away and paint, I'll go for a walk by myself, even if it's for 5 or 10 minutes. We live near a park, and even if it's one loop around the track alone in the sunshine, or I'll sit on my back deck and shut the door and they know that I need some quiet time, and I don't hesitate to communicate that with them. I just need a little time, guys. I need, you know, to read a book on the porch for 20 minutes. And so whatever, and I tell people when I'm coaching on self-care, everybody's toolbox looks different. So I can't tell you what to put in yours. I can tell you there's a lot of great things to try on for size. And if they fit, keep them. You don't always need every tool all the time, but moving your body, eating food, making sure I carry a giant water bottle around and I try to make sure I fill it 3 times. And that's, you know, I have, because if we just go grab a glass and we're not even aware of how much we have or haven't, you know, gotten into our bodies, going for walks, there's so many resources for us right now online as far as home exercise videos and, you know, YouTube channels for us to access. There's a lot of support groups right now. I started one for moms, parents, not just moms, that are homeschooling kids with special needs. And I made sure that we have some content in there on self-care, as well as all the different fun subject areas that we can support each other on. So make time to breathe, step away from hard situations. Before, you know, I've had to learn over the years that I don't have to solve every problem instantly. It's okay to step away, to catch my breath, to not take it personally, and then to go back in with a, you know, even if it's a minute or two, with a couple deep breaths before I go back into the, you know.
I know for many years myself, I, you know, sort of had that excuse. I don't have time. You know, I don't have time to exercise. I don't have time to do this, that, or the next thing. But really, we have to prioritize that time.
Yeah.
If not, we don't do it. And I found at the beginning, probably the second, maybe the third week into the shutdown, I had been complaining, you know, to my husband that I don't feel good. I'm not moving. Because I do a lot of writing and things too. And then, so I'm sitting to do school. And I felt like I was just sitting and not moving. And I could just tell that my body was, you know, I was in a good place and very frustrated. And then, you know, I had all these excuses as I don't have time to exercise. I don't have time to do all this. And then one morning I always, my quiet time has always been my priority. So I always start with that. But, you know, one morning I went from my quiet time to, well, I'll just check Instagram and Facebook, you know, and 3 minutes later, I was still checking Instagram and Facebook. And I realized I could have just been doing yoga for 30 minutes.
Right.
I could have just been stretching. I could have gone for a walk. Like, there was so many other things I could have, but the kids were still asleep. We're talking, it was 6:30 in the morning when I picked up my phone and said, I'm just going to check just now. Yeah. And then it was 7 a.m. and I realized I just wasted 30 minutes. So since that point, I've been making sure that at 6:30 every morning, I'm doing 30 minutes of stretching, yoga, whatever. If the sun ever comes out, it stops raining in upstate New York, I may even go outside and go for a walk. But I feel, so I've been doing this now for 2 weeks going on three, and I feel physically so much better. So we need this. We need this. Yes. An exercise is such a stress reducer that, you know, I've been making sure I'm having my kids do some physical activity every day as well, because I know they need that.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's some great, great YouTube things for kids with fitness and with mindfulness and all of those things right now. So, and if there's any moms looking for online yoga, Yoga with Adrienne is on YouTube, and she's probably what you use. Okay. She's just so kind.
Favorite.
You don't have to know a thing. You don't have to be good. She will make you feel like you are loved and seen and cared for during that. I'm glad that's who you're using. That's great.
My favorite. So that's what I've been doing every morning. So I love that. And then you mentioned your resource, because it's a Facebook group that you have for parents who are homeschooling kids with special needs. How could our listeners get in on that group?
That's a good question. So it's a private group, but I will give you the link so that you can put it in your, but the group is called Special Together.
Okay.
And it's Special Together, and it's parents and educators united to support at-home learning. And so when a couple friends and I kind of brainstormed this group, we put educators and therapists and who volunteer homeschooling veterans in there for about a week ahead of time to build up all the content. And it's a really, it's a really great group with lots of resources. So Special Together. I will tell you that when you go to request it, please make sure to answer the questions and to agree to the rules, or your request kind of gets stuck and we have to kind of find you and say, hey, go back and do that. So, but we would love to have people access that.
Yeah. And I'll make sure that for the show notes for this podcast and for the blog post that goes along with it, we'll make sure that we put that link. So any of our listeners interested in having that support and resource during this time, they'll be able to do that. You blog and on your website, thehealingbreath.org, you also have something on there called the Healing Breath Studio. Is that where people can purchase your art?
Well, it is one of the places. It is kind of one of those companies that does the printing and producing for me, but I also have a lot in stock. So Instagram, the Healing Breath Studio, is a great place to see what I have available. And then I just take a lot of orders through private messenger, you know, either on Facebook or Instagram or email. If people want information about commissioning a painting, that's kind of so personal that it's a more of a one-on-one conversation that we have.
Sure. And that's but I know I went on your website and beautiful. We can look at your artwork.
You can definitely look at stuff, and there is some stuff you can purchase there that just doesn't come straight from my house. And so that's more, but I have a ton here at home too. So either way.
Well, we'll encourage our listeners to go to Tracy's website, thehealingbreath.org, and we'll post links to that also for episode 219 of this podcast, and the related blog post, like I said. So, but as we wrap up here, Tracy, what is on your heart that you want to be sure our listeners take away from our conversation today?
Well, I think that one of the things that I've had on my heart a lot this week is for parents and moms especially, because I think this happens with our children who've been adopted, who especially those who have, you know, special needs or emotional and behavioral needs. Moms, we're like the safe place to fall. And sometimes that's not pretty. That doesn't always look like cuddling on the couch. Sometimes that looks like a kid lashing out at you because you're safe. You've proved that you are the loving one that's there for them, even at their worst. And I'm seeing a lot of that right now, you know, with my own kids. Issues that we had worked through and made progress are coming back up. And I'm an easy target because so if you're finding right now that you've become an easy target, I want you to just keep in mind that the reason you're that easy target is because you've proven yourself to be a safe place to fall. And so, and in keeping that in mind, a way to guard yourself from not taking those things personally and not letting those darts like really get in there and dig deep, that's when that self-care is even more important. That's when stepping away for 5 minutes before you engage with a child that's volatile or hurting in some way. And our kids, especially those with special needs, are not able to communicate. And sometimes their way of saying, this isn't right, I don't feel good, I'm scared, I'm frustrated, or I'm confused, looks a lot like lashing out at us. So if you can take a minute and remind yourself that all of that just means that you've proven yourself to be loving and forgiving, and take a deep breath and realize it's not about you, but it's about their inner pain. That would be my biggest advice to anybody right now, this week, especially during this time.
I love that, because we are all seeing, especially foster and adoptive parents, when we're parenting children with special needs, parenting kids with trauma histories.
Yeah.
This whole unsettling shutdown national crisis that's going on really just triggers those things again to come up. It re-traumatizes, it brings that up, because I know with my kids, they need structure, they need their routine, they need that schedule, they need all of those things. And now all of that normal is gone. It's totally different. They don't know what's coming next. I have, you know, one who needs to know what's going to happen tomorrow, next week, next month, and also what are we doing next year? And now it's like, you know, I don't really have very many answers, but he needs to know that all is right in his world. And, you know, so it is challenging. So it's so important to remember that we're not the cause or the reason. We are the safe place, and we need to look at where that behavior is coming from. And it's coming from the place of pain. So
it is
such a good reminder, Tracy.
Yeah.
So thank you so much. I just love your story. Thank you for sharing and for being a guest today and for all that you're doing with your ministry, with your art, with coaching. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you. It has been a great visit. Thank you so much.
Oh, it's been fun. And we want to remind our listeners, you can check out Tracy's blog, thehealingbreath.org. And we thank you for tuning in today. I hope you were refreshed and encouraged. Make sure you take some time for self-care every day. Exercise, read a book, create some art. Keep listening to this podcast and drop us a line. We want to hear from you. Send us an email or leave us a comment at justicefororphansny.org. Let us know what you want to hear, what kind of topics interest you. We want to make sure that we're putting out shows with content that you want to hear. I'm your host, Sandra Flack, and I've been letting you know I've been working on my book, and I'm thrilled to announce that I have finished the rewrites with my writing coach. So stay tuned to this podcast and our website and social media for news and updates about the release of the book. Really hoping that it will be by the end of the summer that we'll have this book in our hands finally. The title of it is Orphans No More, A Journey Back to the Father. So stay tuned for that. And if you enjoyed this show, please leave a review and share it on your social media and with your friends. You can find and follow more episodes of Orphans No More on your favorite podcast platform and on our website, justicefororphansny.org. Thank you for listening. Stay safe, stay healthy, do some soul care, some self-care, and join us again next time on Orphans No More.
Thank you for listening to Orphans No More, for sharing what you've heard and praying for vulnerable children everywhere. We hope you are inspired to walk out James 1:27 in whatever way God calls you. For more information, visit justicefororphansny.org.